Hi, it's TJ Murphy, editor-in-chief of Lob Magazine. Thanks again for joining us. And we have a treat this week on our show. Actually, one of the things I think is compelling about this story is just imagine the kind of narrative line. If, you know, you're new to triathlon and you get excited about it, and you go in to look for your first triathlon bike, and you kind of whatever sort of background you might have in owning a road bike or mountain bike, you go into the triathlon race bike world, and it can be kind of a shock. I think we've all experienced that at one time or another. Anyways, I'd like to welcome to our show AJ Alley, who is who kind of reacted to that problem in an interesting way, in that he essentially built his own tri bike company. AJ, welcome to the show.
Thanks, TJ. Yeah.
Yeah, I've been to, you know, Interbike my fair share of times. I've been in the sport a long time, and I've seen, you know, what's cool about triathlon. It's always been on the cutting edge of being interested in and developing new ideas and ways to do things a little faster, a little better. You know, it can get to the point where there is an exclusivity factor, and I want to make a good investment in a tri bike, but I don't necessarily want to, you know, put a $5,000 thing on my credit card, or $10,000 or more. maybe you could share your stories. And first of all, I want to mention the name of your company, A2 Bikes, and the website is a2bikes.com, and you operate out of Portland. But and I should also mention, folks may have seen your bike, the entry-level bike is a Speed Freak, which is honestly just a badass-looking bike that I think it starts at $18.99. Right? And it was on display at Oceanside and more recently in Coeur d'Alene. And tell us a little bit about your foray into the triathlon bike industry, and what sort of triggered it, and how it's been going for you.
Yeah, so I mean, my foray into triathlon really isn't that unique. I feel like a lot of people are going to kind of resonate with this, where I did my first triathlon and I fell in love with it. And I actually didn't really come from any of the traditional backgrounds. The reason I got into triathlon was I'd actually just graduated from law school. I was studying for the bar, and I needed a way to blow off steam. So I called up my buddy, and I was like, hey, you know, there's this triathlon that I've been sort of thinking about doing. I know you're a runner. Would you be interested in doing it? I actually didn't even know he didn't own a bike at the time. But within a week, he went out and bought a road bike, and we did our first triathlon 2 weeks later. But we both stuck with it, and so we both loved it. But like everyone else that does their first triathlon, there's a lot of gear. Right. You know, I mean, more so than running, where really all you need is a pair of tennis shoes. Swimming, you just need goggles. Cycling, you really just need a bike. But with triathlon, you know, there's the tri kit, and do you have the right goggles for open water swimming versus your pool swimming, and your transition bag? It gets really overwhelming. And so I love doing, you know, research on all this stuff and figuring out, okay, what do I need? And I love going into the tri shop and talking to people and learning about it. So I started going into our local tri shop here and just pining over these beautiful bikes. And like you said, they're $5,000 to $10,000. They're gorgeous bikes, but I just couldn't drop that much on a bike coming right into the sport. You know, I'd done one race. I was getting ready to do two more. You know, do you really want to make that kind of sizable investment on a triathlon bike in your first season? And intuitively, I didn't think that they needed to cost that much. I couldn't figure it out. And so, kind of as you alluded to, the unique part of this is when I see something I don't necessarily understand, I have to understand it. I've just got to dig into it. So I've actually been going to Taiwan since I was about 15. My dad worked for a high-tech company that did a lot of their sales and production over there. And so I've been going over there for about half my life. So the barrier to entry to getting in was pretty low, but I just started going around and visiting a million different factories and figured out pretty quickly that you can make, like you said, a badass looking bike for dramatically less. And that's where A2 came from.
You know, I think it's interesting to hear about this inquisitive nature that you wield as a sort of weapon. I can only imagine that that served you well in law school.
Yes, it did. It was also
Or was
something I
why you
would
needed to
fall
blow
upon
off
too.
steam, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, I have it with everything. It's good and it's bad. I have this vast general knowledge. I mean, I go in these Wikipedia click holes sometimes where it's just, oh, well, that's interesting. I never thought about that. And then all of a sudden you're looking at like the 1912 World Cup team or something.
I've got to ask. You get on this personal mission and you go over to Taiwan and you can speak a little bit of Chinese, but how do you even get an appointment? Do you kind of I guess you just go through the
Yeah.
front door of sorts and let them know that you're building a company and you'd like to talk. Is that sort of how that works?
More or less. I mean, I knew a guy that knew a guy that knew a guy is kind of the way that it worked. But oh man, those first few meetings were just it nobody really knew what was going on. It was like, so my friend George said, you know Fred, and that I should take this meeting. So what are you doing? And you know, everything kind of went from there. And actually, some of the best relationships that I have in the industry stemmed from those first initial meetings. One of the best relationships I have is with Vision and FSA. They're great guys that are really looking to get into the triathlon market a little bit more. You know, they sponsor some great riders. Andy Potts is a Vision rider, a couple others, but they were kind of saying they think that they didn't quite get into it as much as they did in road cycling. They're huge in road cycling all over the tour right now. But they're really anxious to get more involved in triathlon. So they've been a great help so far.
Oh, great. And I think the introduction of your idea and your bike is timely. And I'm just kind of wondering how this played into your thoughts. Like, if you were to read Bicycle Retail over the last year or two, you get this sort of vibe that the bike industry is struggling, and to whatever the actual metrics are on that, I'm quite honestly I haven't done any reporting or research on that. But I imagine that's something you looked at thoroughly. And what what's your conclusion? And obviously you concluded something that spurred you on to keep going with building your own company.
Well, and interestingly enough, the tri shop that I mentioned earlier that I kept going into isn't open anymore. And what you're seeing is if you go back through and there was a couple lists that I found a while ago of, you know, best tri shops in America, and like half of them aren't open anymore. And I'm actually pretty good friends with the guy that did own the tri shop up here, and we were talking, and he was like, I can't tell you how many times people come in and figure out what they want in the store and then go to Amazon or Chain Reaction, and then they show up with, you know, their new DI2 and they're like, hey, can you install this for us? And what that said to me is the industry isn't going anywhere. There's still a demand for cycling. There's still a demand for triathlon. It's that the industry is changing. And like in all things, if you don't adapt to that and get on the leading edge of it, you're going to miss the wave. So.
Yeah, you know, that's interesting you mentioned that. This goes back a ways, but one of my early jobs was working at a technical running shoe store when I first got into triathlon and running and marathoning and was flipped out over it. So I worked at a very good running shoe store in San Francisco. Now I'd actually did that work pre-internet. basically, or pre World Wide Web, I should phrase that. but then actually, and I moved to New York and had a job there, and then I moved back to San Francisco, and for kicks, I started working there on Saturdays. And this is, now we're talking about the late 1990s, and I had that experience of someone coming in. I'd spent like 45 minutes fitting them in a shoe, trying on all sorts of different models. And we're talking about a, you know, an $80, $100 shoe kind of thing.
Right.
And then they flip out their notebook and go, what was the name of that shoe again? And what size was it that fit me best? And then they go, I'm going to go think about it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and I remember the, now I didn't own the shop, but I still felt this sort of gut-wrenching
twist. Totally.
But you're right. Like there was no stopping that. And I know that this is, you're exactly right. Like, how do we navigate kind of the new era with the Amazon kind of convenience that we can have at the same time? So, and what is your strategy on that? I still think that there's a place for, a good place for retail.
Yeah.
I know that, especially with bikes, like I personally, like I would love to like try out a bike at an expo or at a bike shop and really, you know, get a feel for it.
Yeah.
And, I don't know how to, what's the solution there?
Well, and there was a lot of searching I had to do on that because I knew from the very beginning that I wanted to be exclusively direct to consumer. So we do all of our sales either online at a2bikes.com, or we can also take sales at expos. But that was the way that I decided to do it. Instead of setting up a brick and mortar shop, mm-hmm. going around to as many race expos as I can, which right. is great for me because I love triathlons and I love racing. So I get to race a lot this summer. But it's really important still because, like I said, we're still at the leading edge of kind of a direct to consumer bike sales movement. People are definitely open to it, and we've already seen that in our sales, that there's some consumers that they want the bike, mm-hmm. right? But there's definitely still people that want to feel it, and part of it is, you know, there's just a built-in feeling that people like to see and feel something before they buy it, especially something like a bike. Mm-hmm. I would liken it kind of a little bit to like buying jeans online. You don't know how they're going to fit. So some people still like to go in, try on their jeans, and then go online and find the best price. But there's also people that will just go on and find the best price because they know generally what their fit is. Mm-hmm. So we're in this phase where it's moving to people just buying their stuff online. I mean, you're going to see it with Canyon finally opening, I think they said in August or October, their U.S. sales. And a couple other bike companies are doing some online sales as well. And I think that that's the way that you're going to see the industry continually moving.
Yeah, yeah, I'd agree. Then the upshot is, I'm curious to hear your philosophy on what makes a great bike. Like, what are the primary ingredients that you as a triathlete, and I should mention, I just think it's kind of cool that you had a booth at Ironman Coeur d'Alene, but you snuck out long enough to do the race.
Yeah, I've got a loyal band of helpers that allow me to leave for 5 to 6 hours. But, I mean, that actually gets to an interesting point is that, you know, I do ride this bike. I mean, I ride it 5 times a week. I won't say I ride it every day because my legs can't handle that. But, you know, I'm on this thing as much as humanly possible. I am a triathlete. You know, I'm going through all the training plans. And I think what it does is it really helps me relate to people, especially at the booths. I mean, people love – triathletes love talking about triathlons. My wife hates talking about triathlons because it's all I ever want to talk about. So she loves it that I'm doing this because it's like – good, there's 1,000 people you can go talk to at these events. And then you don't need to keep telling me about how you changed your crank length from 170 to 165 and how you think that's opening your hips more. But yeah,
I know what you're talking about.
Exactly. Yeah, she's like, okay, that's great, honey. Can you go back downstairs and ride your bike again?
So to go on in terms of like, so there you are. So obviously you know your bike well. What were the what in your personal philosophy? You know, some folks just almost narrow it down to weight or something mm-hmm. like that. But you know, I think going back to that feel thing, there is something about the feel of a good bike. And I'm always curious to hear about how the engineering side of that, like how do you achieve that right sense of tension and response so that when you go uphill, you just feel fast, you know?
Right. Well, and a lot of that's just stiffness of the frame. Right. You got to make sure you've got good carbon fiber. That's the number one, two, and three thing. Because if you don't have a stiff frame, the problem you're going to have is every single pedal stroke, you're wasting power. Right.
Right.
So you don't want the frame to be flexing too much. But honestly, one of the biggest things in at least racing and everything is you want to feel confident on it. So for some people, that's they get on the bike and it's the feel of it. You know, they can feel the power stroke every time they turn the pedal over. They like the position that they're in. Mm-hmm. For other people, it's just a look good, race good feeling, right? So you got to have a cool looking bike. So that gets into the logo, the geometry. Does it look like a tri bike? Does it feel like a tri bike? You know, is it going to save you getting off the bike and going into the run? Because at the end of the day, that's about 60 or 70% of the reason that you even ride a tri bike.
Yeah.
So, you know, does the geometry push you forward enough that it's focusing on the right muscles in your legs so that you can actually run off the bike and not get that terrible jelly leg feeling.
Yeah, right. And that sort of gets into the position point of this. And I, we have in the August issue of Lava Magazine, Jordan Rapp has written a feature for us on his top five chunks of advice on achieving a really good triathlon bike fit.
Awesome.
And of course too, the failure to do that and it's compromising performance. It could put you in a position where you're going to get injured. You certainly won't enjoy riding the bike as much. What was your learning curve on that? Not in just in terms of like for yourself, but also how you apply that in, you know, kind of a customer service angle with producing a bike for someone via kind of an online transaction and making sure that you get a good fit for them.
Yeah. Well, a lot of it. So my personal learning style is I throw myself in the deep end and just try to learn as much as I can. So, you know, I've been involved in as much of this as I possibly can. I'm personally not an engineer. As I said, I went to law school, so math isn't exactly my thing. So having people that understand that's very important. But I've always loved getting my hands dirty with stuff. So all of the demo bikes and stuff, I've built those up myself. I've, for better or for worse, cabled them, which was a intense learning curve at the very beginning. They come cabled now because of my experience. But really just diving in and learning all that really gave me a good understanding of, you know, the ins and outs of this bike specifically. So when people come to the website, we've got a live chat up there. It's actually me talking to you. It's not a random person.
No, I've noticed that. You go on your site and you get the little pop-up chat window. It's AJ talking to you.
It is 100% me. Yeah, right, there's sometimes where I forget to turn it off and I go for a swim and I come back and I've got three chats and it's like, oh man, I can't believe I did that. But yeah, no, that's 100% me. But yeah, so when people come to the site, when they have fit questions, I'm able to give them enough that they can at least get on the right bike so that then they can go to their professional fitter and really get it dialed in.
Right,
because,
right.
You know, I'm not Retool certified and Guru certified and all this stuff. There's people that have spent a lot of time learning how to do that. And once you get your bike, like you said, you really should go get a fit.
Yeah.
Because having a triathlon bike is very important if you're racing triathlons, but if you don't have yourself in a position where it's comfortable enough that you can actually stay aero the entire time, you might as well just not be on a triathlon bike. So making that investment is very, very important.
Yeah, I have seen that quite a bit in covering triathlons. Even like at the Hawaii Ironman, you're watching 1,800 of the best age groupers on the planet at the Ironman distance and across age groups, and there you see a not insignificant number of people sitting up out of the saddle, and they've got their aero helmet on, they're on their, you know, their aero bike, and obviously you're not getting much of a benefit from the bike or the technology at all if you're vertical.
Well, the least aerodynamic thing on the bike is you. So getting yourself in the most aerodynamic position that is comfortable for you, that you can stay in for 1 to 3 to 6 or 7 or 8 hours, is really, really important.
And part of the one of the factors going into that comfort level in a long race is the carbon fiber aspect. And you must have received quite an education on carbon fiber. And was that something that, pounding the pavement in Taiwan, you had to kind of really sort of figure out, good carbon fiber can make or break a bike, right?
Right.
What's your thinking on what makes good carbon fiber, and what have you guys done in terms of selecting the carbon fiber for your bikes?
Well, so when I went over there for the first time, I visited, I don't even know how many factories, a lot of factories. Taiwan makes, in general, very good carbon fiber. I saw factories along the entire end of the spectrum. There was ones that were beautiful palaces of bike building, and then there was ones that I'm sure people kind of call to mind when they think of Chinese carbon fiber. So the biggest thing for me was picking a factory that I believed was actually doing the right thing. There's processes in place, there's ways to build the bike, there's suppliers of the carbon fiber, and just figuring out which ones to partner with for that was kind of number 1, 2, and 3 for me of importance.
I see. And now the bike you had before you basically built your own bike, I seem to recall it was a BMC. Is that right?
Yeah. The TMO2, yeah.
Do you still have that somewhere?
I do. I can't bring myself to sell it because technically it would be like right in the same market as selling one of our bikes. So it seems counterintuitive to put that bike onto the market and then take a sale away from us. So,
oh my gosh,
It's literally just like hanging up in my basement. And I mean, there's a little bit of nostalgia. I did my first 70.3 on it, which was interesting. I had some fits and starts in that race. But I actually got a flat tire and crashed in an aid station because I couldn't grab a water bottle with my right hand because I couldn't balance holding onto the bike with my left hand. So I crashed. And then it was Hanu, the 70.3 in Hawaii. So you get all the hard part of the cycling of the full Ironman, and then you have to run on a golf course, which sounded to me initially like a good idea, like, oh, it's going to be soft and cool. And once it got to be about 95 degrees and all the water was evaporating up out of the grass, I didn't think that it was quite as easy as I initially thought. But so there's a little bit of nostalgia with the bike there.
I'm glad you're still loving the sport. You know, one of the problems I can imagine, you're an entrepreneur, you're a creator of your own business, and years ago, I interviewed Gary Erickson, who founded Cliff Bar, and he told me about the sheer stress of starting your own business and how many hats you're wearing, how many decisions have to be made, how you are ultimately responsible for everything, even if you're outsourcing bits and pieces. And you know, we go back. Well, I guess it makes sense. Like if you got into triathlon to blow off steam during, you know, finishing up law school, are you able to fit it all in? Like, how busy is your life right now?
It's extremely busy, but I wouldn't have it any other way. I guess I'm a little bit of a masochist in that respect, in that I love being very, very busy. I like having my days be totally jam-packed. So a normal day for me is I'm up at 5, brush my teeth, and then I just go straight into the office. So I'm in the office by about 5:20, 5:30 most days, and then just grind straight through till about 2 or 2:30. Mm-hmm. And then since I am racing, and this year has been the year of 70.3s for me, I've done 2 so far this year, and I think I'm going to do a third one in the fall. I get about 2 hours of training in from 2 to 4:35. And then the most important thing for me is family. I've got 2 young boys, a 5-year-old and a 2-year-old, and the wife at home.
Great.
And I wouldn't be able to do what I do if they didn't support me through all this. So sitting down, having family dinner for a couple hours, no matter how busy I am, is the most important part of my day. And then after the kids are in bed, I go back downstairs and keep working again. So I work pretty much throughout the day, but I also enjoy every single second of it. You mentioned we were down at Oceanside. We were actually the official bike sponsor for Oceanside down there. And before Oceanside, I was actually in Taiwan. So I flew to Oceanside from Taiwan. So I went Portland to Taiwan. I was in Taiwan for 10 hours, then flew to Oceanside because I had to approve the final samples of the bike. And I wanted to do it in person. I'll tell you about the logo thing that I had to go through after this. But so I flew to Oceanside, got picked up in LAX, drove down to Oceanside, and was there Tuesday afternoon. We had to set up on Wednesday. So Wednesday morning, I went out for a run, trying to shake out my legs. Mm-hmm. Traveling to Taiwan just destroys my legs. Sure. I felt like it killed me for an entire week both times, both ways.
Yeah, your lymphatic system was just shot at that point.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was doing everything I could. I was wearing compression pants, you know, just pounding water as much as I can, limiting alcohol, but it was like a good 5 to 7 days each time I went to try and recover. But so I went for a little run in Oceanside, ran down to the Strand down there, went past Ironman Village, you know, got this kind of cool feeling in my stomach, like, wow, this is really happening. Like all the hard work, it's finally coming together. And I ran out on the Oceanside Pier and just turned around and looked back at Ironman Village. And normally I'm moving so fast, I don't have time for introspection and kind of appreciating the moment, which is something I really try to do. But it was one of those rare moments where it just kind of happened naturally. And I was looking back and I was like, I get to do this. Like, I would pay someone to let me do this job, and I get to do it. And I got just this great feeling of satisfaction and excitement for what was to come. And then I started running back to the house, and there was a group of triathletes that came down that really steep hill to the Strand. If you guys have ever done the 70.3 there, there's a steep hill down to the Strand, and then you do an out and back and finish down along there. And I was feeling all jacked up. So I was like, okay, they're tapering. Like, I'm going to lay it down here and, you know, stay out in front of them. So I started running decently fast for me. I was doing low sixes, and I looked over my
Wow.
shoulder to see if they were still there, and I saw this gigantic, tall, skinny guy in a green pullover and a white headband just right off my back shoulder. And I was like, oh man, wow, I was not expecting that. I was like, okay, well, I can't let him pass me, so I got to keep this up. So I had to actually run a little bit faster to not let him pass me. And I finally got to the end of the strand, and I was just dead. I'd run like 2 miles, and it felt like I'd run 20, basically. And so I was like, okay, fine, I got to let this guy go. And he runs past me, and I see. It was John Fredagno. I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I was just trying to beat John Fredagno along the strand. And the only thing I could think of was, good luck on Saturday.
It would have been fun to check your heart rate right about then, trying to hold
Oh.
off Jan Frodeno and your.
And so then I was like, okay, well, I got to see if I can keep up with him. So I started running again, and I looked down at my watch, and I was doing 550 at that time, and he was easily pulling away from me. And I was just like, okay, nope, not worth it.
Wow, that's fantastic. And you mentioned that there's a story about the logo.
Yeah, so I was going to Taiwan about once a month for close to a year for this reason. So, like I said, the look of the bike is very important. It's a cool looking bike even without the logos on it, but I really wanted to nail the logo on there. We have a little bit of a unique paint job on there, with the main logo being up on the head tube and then our secondary logo being on the down tubes and stuff. So they hadn't done this before, and I wanted to make sure that we got it perfect. So I show up at the factory. You know, they're very much about pomp and circumstance in Taiwan. So they have this huge marquee at the factory, welcome A Squared Bikes, CEO AJ Alley. You know, the president of the factory comes out and walks me into this room to show me the bike, and they've got them all set up with this perfect lighting, and the logo looked terrible on the bike, and just my stomach completely dropped. And so
Sure.
I just sat there, and it was one of these things where it's like, I have to fix this right now. They wanted to ship the bikes with the logo light. They're like, oh, no, it's fine, it's fine. It was like, no, it looked terrible. We got it figured out, but it's just an example of,
You couldn't do it. Yeah.
yeah, well, and you have to have this maniacal attention to detail on this stuff. Otherwise, you're just not going to get it done. And so I had to sit there, and literally, I'm moving the logo like a millimeter down, a millimeter up, making sure it works on everything from the extra small to the large size, because the head tubes are different for all those. So getting the logo to go on there, right? It was the toughest 3 days in the factory that I ever had, because they were all standing there just being like, no, we need to ship, we need to ship. It's like, we're not shipping until this is perfect. And it gives you a little bit of insight into what we went through to get this bike to market, just making sure that everything is perfect.
That reminds me of the Steve Jobs story with the first iPhone. I recall from the biography, I think they produced the first batch of iPhones with a plastic screen, and Jobs changed. He says, "No, we need glass. This has to be glass." And of course, it was stuff was boxed up, ready to ship, sort of thing. And he's whatever. I'm sure it cost him a fortune, whatever that is relative to Apple. But he knew it had to be done, and obviously it made kind of a critical difference. And I'm looking, it is a great looking logo. Like, I'm looking at the bike on my screen, but also it's a pretty cool t-shirt you guys have too. I just want to mention.
One of the biggest things that we got there, everybody that's bought the bike's like, look, I love the bike, but I want shirts. Like, I want to be able to rep this thing. And so, like, we've been going through the building up these shirts, and yeah, it's been fun, which is good because I love shirts and sweatshirts and hats and stuff. So I'm always in A2 stuff, no matter where I go. I'm a walking billboard now.
Sure. And I want to mention, just to kind of go through what you're offering right now. The Speed Freak is the base model, but you also offer
a race wheel package,
which is $1,000 more.
Yeah. So the Speed Freak is the bike. It's the same frame across both packages. What we've got on there is 105 derailleurs on the front and back, an FSA Omega crank, and then Vision Tri-Team bars, Trimax bars, the alloy ones. And it's the same on both bikes. The race wheel package has 45 millimeter clinchers on it. And that's the first upgrade that most people like to make to their bikes. And we decided to make it just a little bit easier so you can include it in there.
Ah, cool. And I make sure to get the price right on that. The Speed Freak retails at $1,899, and the Race Wheel package is $2,999. And
When we were at Oceanside, it was interesting. So we had a couple of the demo bikes sitting out, and people would walk over and be like, "So, like, what? This is another $7,000 bike or something?" Because, like you said, it looks like an expensive bike.
It's got the stealth bomber look, you know.
Oh yeah. Yeah, no, I wanted to call it the B2 for a while, the B2 Bomber, but I decided to go with Speed Freak instead. But so I'd go through this whole thing of, you know, like, oh yeah, we've got Shimano, yada yada yada. It's $1,899. They're like, $18,000? It's like, no, $1,899. And they're like, oh my gosh, wow, that's really great. That's awesome. But I've had everything from $18,000 to one guy was like, so it costs $20? Like, no.
My goodness. Yeah. Well, you know, I want to make a comment. I'm glad to see, you know, your mission here. I like it, producing a, you know, and it's not just about the actual wind tunnel sort of performance of a bike, but as you've alluded to earlier, that you reminded me of an answer that Paul Huddle, the great Ironman coach and former professional triathlete, had told me. I had asked him once for some sort of story I was writing, like, what advice do you give to your athletes in terms of buying a bike? And he said I want them to buy a bike that just looks fast to them, you know. He really emphasized the psychological element. He's like, if you believe that bike is going to be fast, if something about that bike has communicated something to your brain that it's fast, you are going to be fast on that bike, and you've obviously achieved that. It's not exclusive. It's something that you know. We want to get more folks in the sport, new people coming into the sport, and they should be excited about the bike they're buying, and it's just much more doable. So I think that's a cool thing.
Well, and that's really why A2 got started is, you know, I'm a triathlete. I love triathlons. I want to help the sport. I want to help grow the sport. And everybody knows how expensive this stuff is. I mean, race registrations are very expensive. You're going to a couple races a year. If you're traveling, you're adding on to that. And if I can help alleviate that pain point, even just a little bit, I feel like I'm helping the sport and doing my job. Because for $1,899, you can get a great bike, and maybe that saves you a couple extra race registrations a year. You get to do one more race. You get to do a couple more races. You get to get your new tri-suit that matches your black and red A2 bike. You know, it's whatever it may be.
Well, that's great. Well, again, the website, a2bikes.com. And you actually, do you go by A2 Bikes, or it's A2 is actually the name of the company?
It's technically A2, but when I made the company, I knew it was probably going to evolve into A2. So I use them kind of interchangeably.
Oh, okay. So that's, the URL is a2bikes.com, and you know, check them out. And also you've got a map on your website of the events that you'll be at with the bike. Certainly worth checking out to match up anything with the race calendar. It sounds like you're going to be getting out there quite a bit.
Yeah, if you're in the Northwest, we're going to be at Hag Lake Triathlon this weekend, then the Rolf Prima Tri at the Grove, and then we're trying to finalize our last 70.3. So it's either going to be Santa Cruz, Boulder, or Austin, I think.
Oh, cool. And you know, we all need to keep in mind that you could be a corporate lawyer right now somewhere. It sounds like you're a little happier that it's worked out this way.
Yeah, not being a slave to the billable hour definitely makes me a little bit happier.
Well, hey, great talking with you, AJ. Good luck with the company, and keep up the great work. We also and hope to see you out on the race course.
Awesome. Thanks, TJ. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks so much.